Yo, welcome everyone to Brand New Techish. This is your latest tech and pop culture news for the week. And this is a really fun episode, but first things first, a message from our brand new sponsor.
Think back to the last time you signed up for a service online. Did you agree to the privacy policy without reading it or even thinking about it?
Don't feel bad, we've all done it. Our new sponsor, datarightsfinder.org, is here to help.
Brought to you by Open Rights Group and Projects by IF, datarightsfinder.org helps you to understand how entities such as banks and insurance providers are using data about you.
They'll help you get copies of data about you, ask companies to explain any automated decisions they've made, or even get data deleted.
So, if you want to take control of data, which I know you do, about yourself, then go to datarightsfinder.org and tell them Techish sent you.
So I read a really awesome article recently called Reflecting on My Failure to Build a Billion-Dollar Company.
Was it by you?
No, it wasn't by me. I've always had that failure. And I think I will continue to have that failure. It's written by a dude called Sahil Lavingia. I hope I'm pronouncing this surname correctly because I hate when people mash up my surname. But anyway, so the gist of the article is he built a company called Gumroad, which essentially allows people to sell their products and services very easily over the web and not have to set up a really complicated e-commerce platform, essentially. So it was a really like interesting gap in the market. And I get the narrative that he tells within the article is that he took outside investment.
Yeah.
And obviously the normal VC path is that, you know, you have to show 20% month-on-month growth. And eventually he stalled. Essentially, the company had traction, had a lot of users, people that loved this product, but he just couldn't get that kind of 20% month-on-month growth. So he essentially just really, you know, told everybody in the company, listen, we've got to make cutbacks. We've got to kind of, you know, really push everything that's revenue-focused and try to make it. And unfortunately, they didn't. They had to, he basically fired a majority of the team.
Yeah.
And now it's literally just him. But what happened that distinguishes him from other startups is that his product was really helping other vendors and other people start their business.
Yeah.
So he felt bad because they were still generating millions of dollars for their users of their products.
Right.
Who were selling their wares, essentially. Okay. So he was like, I can't shut the company down. We're actually making an impact, but we just haven't created a business that a VC considers to be backable.
Yes.
So he eventually bought out his investors and is in the process of buying out more of his investors. And, you know, he talks about the mental health struggles that he had as a founder, like when he came to the realization that it probably wasn't going to work in the way that he thought it was going to work. And how he talks about how a lot of his friends, you know, went on to become billionaires. And it's like that metric of that being success, it can really warp people's minds.
Oh, and definitely. You're thinking,
like, this guy's making an impact, he's helping people.
Yeah.
But you consider yourself to be a failure. It's insane. I don't know. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but like,
I did.
Is any of that like hitting home?
Well, you know, as a billionaire myself, I've been thinking about this a lot.
<I'm joking.
laughs> But no, it's interesting because did you ever watch Silicon Valley, the TV show?
I never got around to it, you know.
What?
Yeah, I watched one episode and I was like, this is like, I don't know. I want to
turn
off
the tech. Because there are no black people in it, right?
Basically, I mean, it's all tech-related stuff, even in real life. No, I was just like, you know, like I watch tech stuff for like for fun, and for work. And so I'm just like, I don't want to watch tech stuff for like fun.
Do you know what? It's so funny because at the beginning, I also was a bit hesitant to watch it. I was a bit like, oh, this feels a bit too close to home.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Especially because in my Groupon days, it was very much bubble-ish. And I was like, wow, this is so realistic. But anyway, it's quite hilarious for that reason as well. And in it, there is this phrase of the 3 comma club. So one of the investors is like, come on, you got to get in the 3 comma club, baby. Get in the 3 comma club. And there's absolutely this like keeping up with the Joneses vibe that probably happens.
Yeah.
Not only in the Valley, but like other big tech hubs, China, I'm guessing. And people are just like, oh, you're not a billionaire?
Yeah, okay.
You haven't had that exit yet? Oh, you're not a unicorn. So I definitely I can't perfectly empathize, but I can understand him. I'm just trying to get in the 2 comma club. That's my goal. But what I think is so interesting about his story as well is kind of looking at it through the lens of just being an ordinary human being with a great idea and a good work ethic. Because he was 19 years old when he raised his first round, right? And, you know, in the story, he talks about turning what is basically a side project into a business. He raised over $1 million at 19, college dropout,
easy
Mark Zuckerberg
some.
Style. Mm. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the company ballooned in size, hired all these people, many of whom were his friends that I'm guessing he also convinced to quit college.
Maybe,
And then when the growth stalled, he's like, oh, gotta let everyone go.
Fired.
I don't know if anyone watches like Halt and Catch Fire, which is like a show that was like, I think originally on AMC or whatever. Kind of like Mad Men, but about tech and set in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, it rings a bell. I never watched
so it. So good. And like female founder. So holla. But similar vibes happen in that. And you kind of forget like there are emotions behind these startup stories, you know what I mean? And I think that's why people like Ben Horowitz's hard thing about hard things so much. Because unlike a bunch of the other business books, he gets personal. Yeah, he's like, my wife got sick.
Yeah.
She was in hospital. Yeah. And I was in another part of the country.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Like, there's this bit where his father-in-law is just like, yo, man, you're going to lose your family if you don't, like, shape up. And I was like, wow. And for someone to be that vulnerable and be that open about it, I feel like if more people did that, we could change the tech industry. Like, why is it always, like, the smaller voices or, like, these, like, outliers or, like, periphery people that are like, whoa, hold up. I broke away from this status quo and this is what happened and this is how I feel. Sometimes even talking about how you feel is, like, breaking away from the status quo, right?
It's so funny, though, because, like, you know, the last episode I was talking about, you know, the mental loneliness of being a founder. And that was like, yeah, like, it got so much, I hate to use the word traction, but it got so much attention that I was like, right, like being vulnerable is a superpower. But then I realized also in tech, we have this horrible habit of taking anything that can be viewed as a hack and just like rinse it to the point
exploiting
where
it.
Yeah, basically as like
I'm stuck crying now.
Yeah, next week everyone's gonna be like, yeah, like, well, I lost my leg and everything, and then but when I was in my company, everyone's gonna be telling their sub story like in order to get some medium article that goes viral. But like, no, it's real talk. I'm gonna read some quotes that I just found so fascinating from the article.
Go.
Some of my friends became billionaires, I mentioned this already. Meanwhile, I had to run a measly lifestyle business. So that's the end of the quote. Bearing in mind, actually, he is very open about his revenue. And like, I think at one point, they were doing like, you know, $500,000, $1 million a month, essentially. And the net profit was like, even once he made the cutbacks, because they were making a loss, but he cut back and eventually he was doing like $80,000 in net profit per month, right?
Wow.
So that is deemed a failure. Like, and I'm flabbergasted, honestly. But it is what it is. You always say to me, listen, if you sign up for this thing, which is the VC route, you sign up for it, you know what it entails. I just want people not to go into it blindly.
Yeah.
And just know that if you make a business that generates hundreds of thousands per month in profits, that is a failure to a certain extent in that paradigm, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I want everybody to know what they're doing, especially like we have our audience is predominantly like, you know, black and brown founders or just like black and brown people full stop who maybe want to be founders. Just know what you're getting into in that sense. Sure. Don't go into it blindly.
And also like, we talked about this before, Zebras United, depending which way you pronounce it. Our friend Anya Williams is a part of that movement. There was the New York Times article where they wrote about the fact that more and more founders are choosing to say no to venture capital. And I think it's worth exploring hybrid models. Like, I get it. It's expensive to raise a company. Look, I have funding with Alpha, right? I'm not going to lie. But what I'm saying is explore like the hybrids and the variations. Like it's one thing to get money from an angel and set certain expectations with an angel. And it's a whole nother thing to get money from a fund, right? Yeah. And I think we see more and more like hybrid kind of businesses like Notion, which we love using is a great example. They raise like a kind of seed round thing. They haven't raised since then and they don't plan to and they don't want to. And I think just be honest with your fellow founders and yourselves about like the kind of company you want to build and also like how soon you want to have a sustainable business model. And I appreciate that there are certain types of companies where it's just easier to do that. Like obviously if you're building like an autonomous vehicle, this is irrelevant for you. But you know, if it's possible for you to solve your problem in a way where you can get something to market really quickly, then I think it's worth doing that. And I think it's like worth approaching investors who are happy for that. Because ultimately, since the rate of success is so low, there could be certain investors that are like actually like happy for you to build a profitable, sustainable company and be a part of that. And then for you to be like, yeah, and then I'm gonna raise this round and then I'm gonna raise that round. And I'm gonna be like the next whatever, because they're just like, nah, the possibility of that actually happening is lower, you know?
Real talk. So have you been watching this whole Jussie, how do you say his name, Jussie Smollett?
Oof. I've been observing from afar. I've been busy.
I don't think you know what's really going on, to be honest.
I was just like, another black guy got arrested.
Yeah, so he's an actor from Empire, the show Empire, which had like
show. Great show.
You just watched that, right? Yeah,
I watched season one and then I kind of copped out, but still good.
I think me the same actually. I was like, nah, pass. I put it down like alongside Heroes. It's one of those shows was like season one, oh my god, this is amazing, and then afterwards you're like, nah,
it's so repetitive.
Yeah, I'm done. So anyways, like, so a couple of weeks ago I think it was, he got attacked. He was it was apparently a racist attack. So they had MAGA hats on. They were like, yo, this is MAGA country. They called him the N-word. They dropped the F-bomb, the slur against gay people. You know, they put a rope around his neck. So it was like almost like a lynching. Everyone was like, yo, like I was going on Instagram. Everyone's picture was of my dude. And it was like, yo, thoughts are with my man. Are you okay? You know, this country is terrible, blah, 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 blah. So then anyway, the police investigation happened slowly, slowly, innit? Like, and by the way, he went on a media campaign talking about, I'm okay, you know, I fought back, blah, blah, blah. Everyone was utmost sympathy. Okay, 2-2s now. But what happened later on is that the investigation developed and then someone leaked that actually we're starting to think this was a setup.
And what?
A setup from external sources, set up by him.
What?
Yes. Yeah, so what the police did, they found the rope and they found out who purchased the rope. It was two dudes, two Nigerian-American dudes.
Okay.
Who... worked at Empire. One of them was Jesse's personal trainer.
What?
And they were paid an amount around that time, and then they left Nigeria.
What?
Just after the attack.
Okay, not our finest moment.
Yeah, and when the police hollered at these two guys, they just went, "Yeah, my man paid us to do that." So now,
what?
As of recording, he's actually been arrested over reporting a false attack, and.
Oh,
it is
God.
So bad because it's like, everybody was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you, fam. You know what? I was talking about this with a friend of mine who's in the film industry and he was just baffled as well. But I kind of thought to myself,
wow,
actors are very much attention. I was going to say the W word, but they're attention fiends and
starved of it.
Attention starved. And I perhaps he just thought this is my way of getting back into the limelight because a lot of people know him now who didn't know who the hell he was at one point. He must have some kind of there's some kind of underlying issue that he has because I don't know why. I mean, some people are still holding out and still believing him. And you people out there, I love you lot. The people that are still out there saying, nah, it's a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy telling at the black man. Like,
so,
to me, it's looking pretty conclusive that he set this up. Go on. You look so confused right now.
I'm so many questions.
I told you you didn't know what was going on.
I just saw the tweets and I was like, okay, another black guy arrested. Wait a minute. So you were saying that it was a racially charged crime.
He claimed that it was a racially charged homophobic attack based on what was being said. I don't think he described the attackers, but they said this is MAGA country. So we all had in our mind.
Where was he?
I don't know. I think he was in Chicago.
Mississippi.
It's in Chicago. You watch too many movies.
Deep South.
Yeah, no. Chicago.
Oh.
So... obviously, that's a cosmopolitan city, and you're thinking to yourself, like, who's brave enough to go into the middle of Chicago and, you know, try and jump
put
a black
a
man
noose
on a racial
on someone's. You know why this is so messed up? Because people have lost loved ones through attacks and other messed up things and sad things and tragic things. And for him to, like, make light of something so traumatic and so traumatizing, assuming that the facts as they are true...
Mm-hmm.
is very disturbing.
I think we can drop all the caveats. This whole, like, assuming that I think it's a rat man.
But why would he do that? To get in the news?
I think so. Don't underestimate that fame is a drug to a lot of people. And attention is a drug to a lot of people. Like,
he needs to do some meditation, practice some gratitude.
He's going to jail, that's what he's going to get. He ain't getting that, and he ain't getting nothing but that.
As far as
you know what I'm saying? And if it is true, I'll put a caveat. If it is true, he genuinely deserves to go to jail because he's wasted police time and let's not get twisted, the history of Chicago police is mad shady. If anybody knows how the Chicago police gets down, they know what's up. So a lot of people are rightly skeptical, but he deserves to go to jail primarily because he's muddied the water now for genuine victims. So now Trump can go on TV and say all these racial attacks purported to be by my supporters, it's all fake news.
Wow.
Now everyone that comes forward is like, not sure. Is it another one of these ones again? Come on, trash.
Do you
all
think that? I'm just gonna put another conspiracy theory on this.
Gun.
Maybe he has also been played. Think about this though. Maybe like big, you know, far right administration, whatever. It was just like, yo, do this.
Nah.
No. Okay.
Because you know what? He hired. Top defense attorney like early on into like the investigation.
Interesting.
So people are just like, this guy just had guilt written all over it.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's such a bad idea.
Trash. Yeah,
who
trash.
Who told him this was a good idea?
I don't know, boy. Trash. I mean, I can resonate with this. So basically, I'll read the tweet out.
Go.
It's by Amy Hoy. I wasn't aware of her beforehand. So anyway, the tweet goes as follows. if you ever feel bad about making a business mistake, just remember that Toby offered me 5% to design the first Shopify, and I said no. LOL.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So if anybody doesn't know, Shopify is now a billion-dollar company. It's an e-commerce platform that lets people, like, spin out and, like, create these really amazing e-commerce platforms.
Yes.
And they take, like, they have a subscription model, and they've just made oodles of money. It's out of Canada, actually.
It's
a Canadian company, yeah.
Ooh, shout out Canadian people.
Shout out to Canada, shout out to Toronto, the six.
Is that where they are?
I don't know about that, but I just felt like it. That's what I know off the drink, the six. Anyways, yeah, so... Yeah, because you know what? That really resonated with me because I've been in... obviously.
Did someone offer you 5% of Facebook?
No. Oh. I wish. No, I don't wish, actually. I think I would, like, legitimately, like, just give up life. If someone offered me 5% of Facebook and I didn't take it, I would just be like, guys, oh, that's it, I'm done.
Give
I wouldn't
up life.
Want it anymore. No, because what's the point? You'd be like, that was my chance. If you believe in, like, a higher power, you'd be like, that was my chance.
No,
it
you
was
know
given
what you
to
could
me
do?
And I messed up.
You could do, like, a moral friggin' mic drop. And be like, this money, dirty money, because y'all triggering elections, rigging elections, stealing data,
like, blah, blah, blah.
Brainwashing,
yeah, that's
take it back,
that's
take the
enough.
Money back.
You see me doing a media tour, like, being like, yeah, so I turned it down because I had the foresight to realize this would be a bad company for the ecosystem of society.
There's a parallel universe where that's happened, for sure.
Yeah, so the reason why I was saying before I got distracted was that, so obviously as a developer, you get offered... projects where it's like, listen, we'll just pay you in equity. Like, we ain't got no money to pay you right now.
Have you done some of those?
I haven't actually. I always turn it down. Yeah. So I was in a situation where somebody offered me equity for a company that was a crypto company to design their front end.
I remember
essentially.
That.
Right. And I said, I'll do it for a mixture of cash and equity, basically. I said, give me enough money so I can say, okay, I got paid, like, for, like, a decent amount of money, but give me some equity so I can say, okay, cool, if there's any upside. And they said no, actually. So in the end, they said, we'll give you cash, and then if we raise more, we'll give you a cash bonus, essentially, right? And I had to think about...
They pay you in, like, real cash or, like, Ethereum, Bitcoin?
No, they pay me real cash.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, should I do it? Because the problem is, you just don't know. That's the problem. You never know what's actually going to turn out to be the next thing.
Yeah, of course. That's why it's called risk, man.
No, but hold on.
Otherwise, it would be called predictions.
You have to realize as well, though, that there's an infinite amount of opportunities in that sense of people that want to do startups, and there's a limited supply of developers.
Mm-hmm.
So you're constantly going to get inbound, and you don't know who's a faker and who's not. So
yeah.
What I really like about Amy Hoy's follow-up is that if she could go back in time, yeah...
Yeah.
Not with foreknowledge, but if she could go back in time, she probably would still make the same decision, primarily because something can be rational, but be wrong, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
So she made a rational decision, which is that, I don't know you from Adam. I don't know if this startup's going to do anything. You have no track record,
okay.
Right? So it's rational for me to say, pay me, I want to get paid. But she still ended up wrong. So sometimes making the right decision can be the wrong decision,
yeah.
If that makes any sense. And it's difficult. I don't have the answer, Swain.
But that's because I had to caveat your assumption, because there's not infinite opportunities. I mean, there might be in terms of, like, the count, but not
correct.
In terms of the quality.
Exactly. That's what I mean. When I say opportunity, it's infinite inbound. That's
there,
correct. That's,
okay.
That's a better
okay.
way of phrasing it,
there
right?
we go. There
yeah,
we go.
Yeah, yeah,
but that's the gift, isn't it? That's the gift. Like, what little element or data point have you just caught onto that you're, like, sniffing out something good
yeah.
before other people realize?
Because it's difficult. You're an engineer or a designer, or you've got some kind of skill set. And in the end, when it comes to these kind of situations, you end up having to be like almost like an angel investor, but you're not investing money, you're investing your time. So an angel investor gets 1,000 deals, they look at them, and they can assess what startup is likely to make it and what startup is not likely to make it. But being an engineer, designer, or a developer is a completely different skill set.
Yeah.
You don't have that kind of that nose, essentially, because it's not your area of strength. So it's very difficult to tell somebody who's an engineer, take the risk on this company, on that company, on this company, on that company. With me, where I would take that risk now is if it's something that I believed in. So this crypto platform, I didn't necessarily believe in it. I was like, seems a bit me too. But if somebody came to me, was like, oh, we're building this platform, and it's something to do with some kind of Pan-African something, and I thought, wow, this
Eritrea.
Is sick. Yeah, not Eritrea, but any kind of like, so for example, if a company like Tastemasters Africa came to me 2 years ago and was like, do you want to help us build this platform that connects the diaspora to Africa? I would be like, you know what? I believe in this. I'll pay. I'll do this for free. See what I'm saying? But in terms of just like, here's my Uber for dog pet sitting, I'm gonna be like, nah, fam.
Interesting. I feel that, like, what I have observed from my VC friends that invest early stage and, like, seed and stuff like that, is that they don't invest in ideas per se, but actually they invest in people. So I feel like I would just be like, that's logic is sound, but I would almost like add another dimension to it, which is I will also invest in people who just feel like a luminary. There are just those folks where you're just like, you're going to do something great. I don't know what it is, but you have that drive, that tenacity. You've already accomplished a lot of things, so you've got that work ethic. Mm. It's like, I'm just going to bet on you, because ultimately, even if the idea isn't great, it can be pivoted, or like the audience and the brand that that person builds can be applied to something else.
But I think being an angel investor is a skill, and knowing whether a founder is any good is a skill in itself. Like,
yeah,
there's a very fine line between a visionary and a BSR. You see what I'm saying? It's a fine line.
Yeah.
Like, they call Steve Jobs, he had the reality distortion field. So he was able to make people believe something, even if it wasn't there just yet.
Mm.
This product's going to be the greatest, and it's like an idea on a piece of paper.
Mm.
And he is able to manifest that. But who else can do that? Bullshitters. Like, they can say, oh, trust me, this is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread.
But that's where you add like your wider macro knowledge of the world with it.
Because
if someone says to me, like, yo, I'm going to invent ice, that is like sold in like wherever, I don't know, basically I'm not gonna buy it if it sounds stupid, like if the conditions are not right to like support that thesis, I'm just gonna be like, okay, well now I'm doubting your intellect, because you actually think that that's an idea and that sounds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had a Lyft driver, sorry if you're listening, but I had this Lyft driver while I was in California, and he was just like, oh yeah, I've been like sitting on this idea for a while, and I was like, okay, shoot. And it was basically like he had found a way to like make solar powered energy slightly more effective, right? And I was like, okay, interesting. Now obviously I'm not an engineer, so I didn't know like the mechanics of it, but just from the way that he described it, I was just like, okay, so like energy, big industry, how are you planning on like tackling that or entering that? And he was just like talking like conspiracy theories of like not revealing too much, like big power and all this, and I was just like, I'm not gonna invest in that.
Sorry,
not that he was pitching, but you know.
Sorry, no check from Ava.
No.
So, Abba, did you watch the Brits?
Well, no, but
me neither. We didn't watch the Grammys. We were terrible hosts.
The Apple News highlights from the comfort of my bed when I first woke up this morning on my phone. They actually had some good Apple News stories. Shout out Apple News team. Normally it's like trash. Well, they just serve me like the sun in the mirror. They're always talking to me about Meghan Markle. I was like, I read a story about her once. But anyway, I watched the highlights. None of the American people showed up. No Ariana Grande.
Mm.
No Drake. No... the Carters, we'll come on to them in a minute.
Yeah.
But there was a outstanding contribution award from my girl Pink and her performance. Oh, you laughing?
You know what? First album,
wow.
Pink. First album, Pink. When we thought she was black, you know, when we
you used to, done
like,
know.
Yeah, first album, Pink, with the R&B. Like when I hadn't seen the visuals, I thought she was black. I was like, yeah. And then she went on this rock thing. I was like,
what? That was her roots. She was tapping into her. She was being authentic.
Man. First album, Pink. I'm there. Second album, third album, Miss Me. That's what I'm
get
going.
Let's get the party started. That was a banger, though.
Okay. You get one track from me. That's all right. That's not bad.
I'm a ride or die Pink. I am ride or die Pink.
Forget Pink. I wanted to talk about Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Okay, let's do it.
So basically, they won a Brit for Best International Group in it. And like, they didn't turn up. But what they did, they sent in a local video of
them.
Yes,
they did.
And they kind of recreated the video they did for Ape Shit, which is where they were standing behind the Louvre, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They're standing behind the Mona Lisa, sorry. I think it was
yeah. In front of it.
Yeah, right. And but instead, it was a picture of Meghan Markle. And I'm going to read you the actual Instagram quote that Beyonce did to kind of give more context. Thanks for you to the Brits for awarding me, blah 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 blah. Anyway,
I thought you were reading the quote.
Yeah, I got it wrong. In honor of Black History Month, we bow down to one of our melanated moaners. Congrats on your pregnancy, we wish you so much joy. Now some people are kind of saying that this is Beyonce showing solidarity with Meghan Markle, because if you've been following the British press, she has been getting pilloried,
yeah,
as in
white supremacy is
yeah
real.
Fam, I've been seeing articles where she'll wear like a short sleeveless dress, like a shoulder showing, and they'll be like, oh my god, the royal decorum has been broken. And then somebody will get a picture of like what's the Prince William's
Diana
wife? No, Prince William's wife.
Oh, Kate
Middleton, sorry, yeah. And she'll be wearing the exact same dress, and it's like, and it'll be from the same,
yeah, but she's white.
I'm trying to get all intellectual here, but yeah, you basically narrowed it down. Go on.
Sorry. Just pulling out the race card.
Bruv, listen, I hate that phrase, but yeah, you know what? It's like, the funny thing is with Meghan Markle as well, is that she is like the most possible form of blackness, in the sense that she is almost like white passing to a certain extent. If you didn't necessarily know what she was, you might not tell that she was.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You're right. So this is the most acceptable form of blackness, and she has been getting getting it so bad, especially from the Daily Mail. I'm like, wow, guys, at least you had to make it subtle.
I know, at least try. That's why I sometimes almost wish she did get her hair caught in the rain and I could see those natural curls flow. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, yeah.
I remember one episode you were like, you hope their child is like a throwback and just comes out with some giant afro, like.
I just want to see her hair wet. Yeah. I just want to see that. But yeah, I think the hate is real. The hate is real. And people who aren't in the UK, you can just go on Google News and check it out. But they are hating on Meghan. And like the most ridiculous one I saw recently, because Apple News thinks I'm obsessed with her. So 80% of my feed is, she's cool. She's a beautiful lady and, you know, she does great work. But it was like, what did it say? It was like, Meghan Markle violates royal decorum with public displays of affection. And it was like, she was holding his hand.
Shut the hell up.
She was holding his hand.
Oh, my days.
I was like, at least she didn't get photographed topless. Like the other one.
That happened, didn't it?
Yeah, that happened.
Yes, and they switched.
Oh, but people are just like, oh my God, the French press are so distasteful. How dare they do this to our queen or whatever, princess. And now Meghan Markle, they're just... I think what people haven't, what they're trying to say in a coded word is, we don't like you. We don't want you in our royal family. That's what they can't say that though, right? Because she's in the royal family and that would be like anti-patriotic and anti-nationalistic. Yeah. So instead they just find other things to complain about, but they just need to say it. And also, why do they keep paying her estranged relatives to give nonsensical trash stories about her?
Yeah.
There's a reason why she isn't talking to these trash folk.
Yeah.
Because they trash. And yet all these tabloids keep going back to her like estranged whoever, father, sister, blah, blah, blah. Just because someone shares your blood.
Don't make them family.
Thank you.
Pause.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And they're just like, oh, Meghan Markle's this, Meghan Markle's that. I was like, to you she is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she ain't to her. Like, you can call her your sister if you want because it helps you sell headlines, but it's not actually relevant to her life.
And like, even Prince Harry came out around the time of when they had announced the engagement and he was like, yo, the treatment my fiance has been experiencing is absolute racism.
Mm.
So it's not even a thing where if you're some kind of right-wing conservative mofo, you can even sit there and be like, well, you know, maybe it's this. Maybe. No, even Prince Harry came out and was like, this is complete racism. Pure racism and I'm not going to stand for it. So this happened a while ago, but we didn't really talk about it. So
let's talk about it.
So Amazon was kind of shopping around for their second headquarters.
Yes.
And, you know, they were flirting around, shopping around, looking for the best deal they could get from whichever city.
Classic Amazon.
Classic Amazon, right? And, you know, so Scott Galloway, who's like a pundit, tech pundit and a professor. He's on Recode Decode podcast. He's really good. He was like, it's obvious that the city is either going to be Washington or New York because...
Yeah.
Second headquarters are normally determined by where does the CEO want to spend most of their time. And they were shopping around, talking to places where it was just like down south, Midwest, where it's like no CEO, realistically speaking, unfortunately, wants to spend their time there. They want to be in the big cities, essentially. Mm. And he was spot on. They chose New York. But obviously, because they were shopping around, they got the best deal they could get. They were giving all kinds of tax breaks, essentially.
Wow.
So some people were just like, yo, this is the richest man in the world.
Thank you.
This is one of the most successful companies in the world. Yep. Yeah. Why are we giving him tax breaks? Why are we giving them tax breaks? Sorry.
Yeah.
And they had a few meetings with Amazon people and the politicians within New York. And the politicians kind of gave them like, kind of ripped them apart to a certain extent. They kind of shouted at them. Obviously, you know, with respect, but, you know, telling them, why are we giving you this? Why are we giving you that? And in the end, Amazon was
pay up.
Yeah. Amazon was just like, they bounced. They were like, all right, cool, we're off, kind of thing. And I don't know, I feel like...
Come to Nigeria.
I feel like there's like a change of tone now with which people like speak to tech companies now.
Yeah.
We no longer realize that it's just an all like a net good when we're just like, yo, pay your taxes, fam. Like I saw, so Mona Chalabi, she's British, but she's in New York. She kind of is like a data analyst slash scientist. She does these really
She's always on Frankie Boyle's show.
Right, there we go, yeah. And she drew this amazing picture where it was like a chart of Amazon's profits. And underneath that's a chart of Amazon's taxes, what they've paid.
Mm.
The profit up to the right. Beautiful chart.
Wow.
And taxes, flat as hell.
Mm-hmm. There's a connection.
Flat, as in like literally negligible. You couldn't even see it.
Wow.
And it's like, it just can't run anymore. I think the sentiment has changed. Like, there was a great article called Abolish Billionaires, which I don't agree with, but in the New York Times. But it was, I think the sentiment now is, I think... The pitchforks are starting to warm up. That's all I'm saying.
It was interesting, you know, because I follow like Austin Allred from Lambda School on Twitter, right. And yeah, he tweeted like, oh, say goodbye to all those jobs.
Right.
And I was like, sometimes we kind of need to like create a hierarchy of values, don't we? You know what I mean? And it's like, yes, the jobs aren't going there. Mm. But at the same time, it's like they have principles to defend, right? And what they don't want to do is like set a precedent that if you are big enough or you are important enough, even though you can afford it and even though you should because it's the law, we're going to like let you cut corners.
Mm.
Because that's basically what was happening, right? A tax break in some ways is cutting a corner. Mm. It's like finding a way to not have to pay as much money.
Mm.
And I feel that if capitalism is going to get better, I'm not saying we got to replace it, tear it down, but we've said before that it could be better and we're all aware of how it could be better.
Mm.
It's not going to get better unless we challenge things like this. That's my view. That's my view. Like,
I agree with you.
I think what happened in New York was people weighing up the circumstances with a very long-term view to what would happen. And I'm sure they'll just go to another state that doesn't care as much. I was actually in America at the time watching American news, by the way. American people listening. Yeah, I don't know how you do that.
It's nuts. And then every advert, it's like a drug advert.
What?
If you're suffering from this, you need this. I was just
but
like,
then
fam.
Like the risks at the end of the commercial is like may cause death, erectile dysfunction. I was like, this is like fam. So anyway, first of all, American TV. Wow.
Oh yeah, so if you're listening in America, like no other country has those adverts. Like we don't have those adverts. Like, yeah, you're not allowed to try and sell drugs on TV like that. You're not allowed, fam. Anyways, go on.
That's also because most countries have free healthcare, but anyway, let's not go down there. But what I found so fascinating was the aftermath from this announcement, where you had like governors and like whatever senior people from other states being like, this is outrageous. If Amazon want to come to Ohio, we'll have them here. This is outrageous. You know, that was me doing my like, I'm a white American politician man voice. But yeah, it was just interesting. And I just think we need to see people standing up to stuff. I think that the trend that I am hopeful for in the next midterm of life is people being more open to challenge the status quo. And when I say like people, I mean like not only marginalized groups, but like incumbent forces of power and incumbent forces of influence. And I just hope more people have the courage to think that way. And I'm not worried about jobs in New York. I think there's going to be plenty of jobs to come in New York and it's going to be all right.
That's what I'm saying. It's not as if New York was like, we need, like, we're struggling right now. New York is like...
Well, exactly.
It's like, you know, the flipping epicenter of capitalism. They're doing all right. Like, you know what I mean? But yeah, I just think the sentiment has changed. I think what should... And I can't necessarily even blame Amazon. I think they are operating in a system that allows them to operate in such a manner.
Yeah.
But this whole concept of being able to shop around internally within the country and each state and each city can offer you all these kind of benefits, it's a race to the bottom. I think we're kind of almost going to a situation now where companies and rich individuals will no longer be required to pay taxes as long as they can promise a couple of jobs here and there. You give us some jobs... You give us some products that we love.
Yeah, God, we're that desperate.
That's what it's come to. That's what it's come to. So what Austin Allred said, and I admire his work with Lambda School, no disrespect to the person, but at what cost?
Mm.
At what cost? A company that hardly pays any taxes is getting a tax break.
Mm.
And I'm saying, they're giving us jobs, so let's say, I would understand if all the jobs were like 80K a year.
Mm.
Fam, they're like, it's minimum wage almost.
Yeah.
It's a minimum wage, like, we're just asking for just act like responsible citizens within this economy. That's all we want. Like, we all love Amazon in terms of like how quickly they can deliver books, and you know, someone once put it to me in a sense that because they made books so affordable, it's almost opened up reading to a whole new demographic to a certain extent. Because back in the day, it was like 20 quid for a book, like facts, like, you know what I'm saying?
It was
for hardback.
Well, but Amazon books are not all cheap.
I started buying
secondhand books on Amazon.
Yeah, but even that's still Amazon though.
Yeah, that's true.
But what I'm saying is that like, there's many things that we love about this company. Don't get twisted. But, yo, we're just asking, like, to behave responsibly to a certain extent before you're made to behave responsibly.
Yeah.
That's the honest to God's truth.
Are we stupid?
Yes.
Because we pay taxes. And then with the money we have left, we use Amazon that does not pay taxes. We don't own any equity in Amazon. I'm not... not anymore, anyway. And I just feel like, are we both stupid and hypocrites? Because I'm starting to feel like we are.
I don't think we're stupid. I think the system is set up so that we as individuals are so hard pressed with our own struggles in terms of paying the bills, in terms of getting to where we want, that we don't have time for that kind of mental bandwidth to be worried about exactly where does my dollar go. Like, do you see where I'm coming from? And I wish in an ideal world that, I'm making us sound like we're powerless, we're not. When we come together, people come together, they can move things massively.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wouldn't use the word stupid. I think we're behaving in a way that the system has been designed for us to behave. And
I want to speak to Amazon defectors, though.
You are an Amazon defector. What are you talking about?
No, I left Amazon as an employee. No, but I mean, people that don't shop on Amazon anymore.
Yeah, where do you go? This is like a little shout-out section. We're going to do a few shout-outs. Abba wants to go first. What do you want to shout out?
I want to shout out my new startup. Woo. So alpha.com, which is basically alpha with an E, E-L-P-H-A.com, is the daily water cooler for women in tech. It's a place where we can come together. It's a private community. This also includes, by the way, like non-binary people on the like more women side of the spectrum. You can come talk about whatever's on your mind. It might be a career-related issue. It might be a personal-related issue. You can access industry experts. We've had Saran of Code Newbies. You were on her podcast. Tracy Chow Project Include. We're going to have Anir Williams on soon. Alex Marshall, Backstage Capital's been on. A lot of founders from the YC family. The creme de la creme of the tech world, who are women and non-binary, are in there participating in the discussions and the conversations. People can share events. People can share connections. People can find co-founders, teammates, jobs, whatever. Amazing. You can vent. We talk about what we're reading. I'm just trying to make it like the destination where you spend your lunch hour instead of reading celebrity gossip. I know what you're thinking, but I'm a guy. What do I do? Well, if you're a guy, you probably know a woman in tech.
There we go.
She might be your teammate. Yep. She might be your partner. And you need to tell her about alpha.com as well. And guess what? There aren't that many black women founders out there getting funded and winning at this, so I really need to do it. So I can pass it back to the community. So yeah.
Sick. Yeah, go to alpha.com. Support. I want to shout out team Amalia.com, so Nafisa and I think it's Selena. They acquired...
Whoop whoop.
Let me explain. They are a platform for Muslim women, essentially, and they're both based in London. I know them through the tech ecosystem out here in London, and they have acquired Halal Gems, which is like a discovery platform for Muslim food services, I think. And I want to shout them out because so often, you know, everyone's always like gunning to get acquired. I want to get acquired. I want to sell my company. But here we have somebody actually acquiring a company and they're building their own little empire.
Yes.
So I want to shout out. That's a big move. I rate that 100%. I want to shout out Ruben Harris, careerkarma.com. He is someone I interviewed initially back in the day for Pocket really early. And I always knew that he was a go-getter. Now he's also in YC as well. I don't think he's in the same batch as you.
What?
But he launched Career Karma with his friends and it's like a platform for people that are learning to code. So go check that out, Career Karma, if you're learning to code. And yeah, tell them that Tekish sent you. So that brings this episode to a close. Use the hashtag Tekish like we always say. Support us on Patreon if you want and leave a review on all the podcast platforms that you use. Anything you want to say in closing?
Hey, if you enjoyed this episode of Tekish today, why not forward it on to a friend who may not have heard the show?
And a shout out to our new sponsor, datarightsfinder.org. For supporting independent black-owned media. Ciao.
Thanks for listening.